Welcome to another episode of the Learn Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Clemenson. And if you're a recruiter out on your own or just lacking general advice or mentorship, you've come to the right place. Our episodes are designed to give you the motivation, the strategies, and the support you need to become the very best Learn Recruiter. So join us, grab a cup of coffee, and let's take your desk to another level. Now, today, I'm joined by Andrew Casson. Welcome.
Thank you, Brett.
I wanted to bring him in to share his expertise with the audience here at the Learn Recruiter. I've worked with him before, and I thought that what he has to say and his ideas and how he approaches things is phenomenal. And for those of you who don't know who he is, he used to call himself an exit strategist, but he's a whole lot more than that. I'm learning. He's, you know, if you're thinking of M&As or you eventually want to sell your recruitment business, which, hey, who out there doesn't ever think that? If you haven't had that thought and you run a recruitment business, I don't even know if you're running a recruitment business, because we all have that idea that one day we might sell. Why not get this guy in to at the beginning of the process and go, hey, here's what I see today that might trip you up down the line. And that's why I brought Andrew into my realm not too long ago, and he gave me some wonderful tips. So I wanted to go through some questions today around, I've got four or five questions here that came to mind I thought were quite useful. But before we get kicking into that, yep, I'd love to understand how you got here. Like, what's your background?
Wow. I've been doing M&A for the last 20 years, so it's almost to the point where anything below before that is irrelevant. But no, I started off in recruitment, in IT recruitment, IT contracting specifically,
right,
in Melbourne, and worked for a couple of agencies down there and eventually went overseas. Like, I found a job in LA, mm-hmm, and I went over and worked in the US for 3 years and then came back. I ended up in a management consulting firm, and one of my clients asked me to help her get ready for sale. So that involved going in there and tidying stuff up and putting processes and procedures in place and all the stuff that you need to do to make a business.
Hiding problems, making it look good.
Window dressing, yeah. It's like getting a real estate agent in to have a look before you actually go on the market.
Sure.
And then she actually said, so can you help me sell it? And my boss and I looked at each other and went, well, yeah, of course we can. So we did. Got the deal away, and I said, well, I want to do more of that because that was fun. And he said, well, I don't want to do that, so off you go. Here's the database with my blessing. And here I am, 20-something years later.
Okay, very good.
And done a lot of work in the recruitment space still. I do work mainly with service businesses, so recruitment's a big part of that, but also any consultancies out there, marketing, communications, healthcare, allied health. Travel companies, whole range of different things, but anything in B2B services.
Do you mentioned LA. I know you're Sydney based. Do you have a region that you look after, or is it Australia wide?
It's Australia wide, Australia, New Zealand, really.
Yeah.
Although the way that my exit strategy component works, it can be delivered to anyone around the world.
Mm.
But in terms of the M&A transactions, and yeah, it has to be sort of Eastern Seaboard and New Zealand.
Well, for me, when I brought you in, I really just wanted you to give me some ideas of, you know, because this is what we're trying to achieve, and I wanted to just get your very quick litmus test on whether that was smart, dumb, the other. And I think there was a couple of ideas that came out of that that I've already jumped on and gone, cool, we're good here, we're not here, and I thought it was very valuable. But my first question to you is, like, you know, what are some of the realities facing business owners or recruitment owners who intend to sell?
I think the biggest thing is it's really rare for someone who runs a business to see their business from an external perspective.
Yeah.
So how would a buyer actually view the business? Mm. And because you're so much on the tools, you're in the business all and you know it and you love it and you've built it and it's your baby. The reality is someone might come along and tell you your baby's ugly one day. And you actually have no idea.
You gotta see the baby.
So it's actually really valuable really early on to get an external perspective and have that on the way through, because to have the external perspective as a sounding board as you go along, someone saying, if I was to do this, how would that affect my end goal of actually building a saleable business, might actually stop me going down a path that's right. Now, I often use the example of there's an IT recruitment company that I know well. They do have IT recruitment. They were in accounting and finance initially. They expanded into IT. But then they went, oh, we're chasing revenue. We want to build our growth, so let's go into healthcare.
Right.
And so they've got a really good business in accounting and finance. That's their specialisation. They've got a reasonable team in IT, but their healthcare was one person. And they were touting that they had, you know, a healthcare division.
Right.
One person. Now, you can't compete in reality against the bigger agencies that are in the healthcare space.
Mm.
It's just not possible with one person. But also keeping in mind that a buyer is only going to want to buy what you're the best at. So where are you in your lane, number one, number two in your market?
Mm.
So to compete with you, they have no choice but to buy you. So their other option is to greenfield, which is really hard and really expensive and doomed to fail.
So why buy one person in healthcare when we can just do it ourselves?
Exactly. But why, if I want to have a finance and accounting specialist business as part of my strategy, why start from the scratch when I can build, when I can buy a team of 20 people? So, you know, having that buyer's view available to you all the way through will actually help you go, well, what's the best way to stay in our lane, to maximise what we've got and build an asset that someone's actually going to want to buy?
Mm.
Because the reality is most business owners face is that only 20 to 25% of businesses that go on the market actually succeed when they find a buyer.
What trips them up mostly?
Well, most of the time it's because they haven't never thought about it from the buyer's perspective.
Right.
They love their business and they've made decisions that they think are the best for their business and it's been great for income generation. But they haven't built something that's actually a saleable asset.
You kept the word value comes to mind, like you've got to create value to the market, right? Because you're saying like cash flow is important and profits are important, but if it's not the right profit or right cash flow, that's not.
Well, I'll give you an example. So perm recruitment businesses, fabulous businesses.
Yeah.
They're great for cash flow because you don't need to fund a payroll or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just profit a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Fabulous businesses. Can't sell them.
Right.
No one wants to buy a perm business.
Because of the risk?
Well, just because once you've made the sale, you have to go and sell another one.
Yes.
Whereas you sell a contractor and they're there you know, for 12 months or longer, often longer, coming from a contracting background. So, you know, you can go to an accountant and get your business valued and the accountant will say, well, let's look at the you know, three times the average of the last 3 years of profit and that's what the business is worth.
Mm.
But the only true test of value is when you ask someone to dip into their checkbook and write you a check,
yes,
for what your business is actually, what you think it's actually
you're worth, what the market deems you worth.
The market is, yeah. And the market is telling me, and tells so many perm recruitment business owners, that what they have is worth nothing.
Wow,
which is really disheartening for a lot of people.
So if you, were to open an agency today, and your goal in 5 years' time was to exit or sell or extract value out of it, where would you start? And how would you structure it? First perm versus contracting temp, RPO. I don't know. You tell me. Like, is there a perfect shape to a recruitment business at the moment that you would be able to say, if I had 10 of those, I'd sell 10 of those?
I won't answer that question like that. Okay. Where I would start would be to say, I'm creating a product for a market. Mm. I want someone to buy a product in 5 years' time, and that product is going to be a business. Mm. So I need to know who that market is. So what do they look like? Is it an overseas corporation? Is it a local corporation? Is it staff?
Mm.
So who's actually going to buy the business? Mm. Why are they going to buy it? Or what are they missing? So if I'm looking at, say, Japanese companies, for example, there's one that bought a business last week. Recently, there's a few others in the market at the moment, but there's another 30 or so over in Japan that have signaled that they want to buy in Australia. And if you want to get a really good multiple, that's fantastic, sell to a Japanese company.
Mm.
But you have to build what they want.
Right.
And what so they if want? You know what they want, I'm not going to tell you right now.
Ah.
That's the secret sauce. No, but you have to have a certain scale. You have to have a certain corporate structure, a certain profile in terms of perm versus temp. And it's got to be a pretty low risk option for them to buy because they don't have people in Japan they're going to send over to run the business. They want a management layer in place.
Right.
If you wanted to sell to private equity's got something like $21 billion in dry powder at the moment that's looking for a home.
Wow.
In Australia.
Wow.
No, there's about $3 trillion around the world.
Yeah, I was going to say that seems low globally, but that's a lot for Australia.
It's a lot in Australia, yeah. But if you wanted to sell to private equity, then again, if you understand what they're looking for and why they would buy, then you can create something to suit that market.
Mm.
So that's the entrepreneur's perspective
yep.
on building a business.
Yep.
An entrepreneur builds a business so they can sell it to someone else. A business owner has a business so that they can have a job and make an income. And it can be a lifestyle business, but effectively they're in the business. They're not building it for someone else.
Mm.
So if you go back to your original question, if you wanted to build something to sell, then you've got to begin with the end in mind. You've got to start with understanding who's going to buy it and why, and then understanding what they look like. So what's their persona? It's like classic marketing.
Yes. You know? Well, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Creating a recruitment desk. It's the same process. It's like work out what the clients want, go and find it.
Yeah.
So I like that. And I think, you know, I built a business, started a business 10 years ago, and the first thing pops in your head is like, well, maybe I could sell it, but I didn't do it. I didn't think of it at any way you just described. I just went, well, I know what I do well, which is recruiting. I'll just bring other people in around me that do recruiting well as well, and then it will work itself out.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is that's not the case, and I'm guessing that most people listening to this have probably done the same thing I have.
Well, that's so typical of recruitment. That's the way the industry has grown over time. People come out of the big agencies, start their own. But if you were to be an entrepreneur, like a tech entrepreneur or something, and you went to VCs cap in hand to raise money, one of the first questions they're going to ask you is, what is your exit strategy? But when you're an entrepreneur to start working for yourself, no one ever asks you that question.
No.
Interesting to ponder.
I like it. I like it a lot, which is why you're in the room. are there alternatives to selling but still exiting?
Well, you can sell it. You still have to exit at some point, like physically move away from the business.
Right.
You can retain the business as an income-generating asset for you. So think about this little thought experiment.
Okay.
If you were to sell a business for $5 million,
yep.
for example, so you got $1.5 million in profit, you end up selling for $5 million. By the time that money reaches you, the tax man's taken his share, and you might be left with $3.5 million. All right, so you've got cash in the bank, $3.5 million. You buy some Sydney real estate, you guarantee that's going to go up. But apart from that, where else are you going to invest $3.5 million to get $1.5 million in return every year?
Other than crypto.
But it's actually really difficult because normally you'd take a much more conservative strategy with that capital, give it to a financial manager. They might be able to get you $300,000-$400,000 a year.
Yes, no, you're right.
Return on investment. So if you can structure it in such a way so that you can move yourself out of the business and go surfing and Taylor Swift concerts and all the other stuff that you want to do and just have that non-executive role in a business, that business can continue to generate income for you while you have physically exited having to be on the desk and actually run the business on a day-to-day basis. So that's one option.
So it's now an income-producing asset.
Correct.
Rather than a business that you work in.
It's... Yep. The goose that lays the golden eggs rather than selling.
I guess in that scenario, you need to be super confident that it's going to continue producing.
That is the rub.
Without you in there.
And there is, and I won't mention their names, but there's a large IT recruiter at the moment that has made that call where the founder has had to move back into the CEO's seat because their management layer wasn't performing. And I think costs blew out a little bit and they had to rein that in a bit.
And so I think that's the big... concern of anyone on that strategy, right, is that I'm going to have to go back in at some point.
Yeah, well, that's the trouble with people-based businesses.
Yeah.
So, look, it is an option. It's might not be the best for everyone, but it is an option. Another one is to sell the business to staff over a period of time. So have an employee share ownership program. It takes 5 to 7 years to get that to work properly.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. And in a perm business, that might actually be the best option.
Right.
So it's not to say you can't sell a perm business, but... you need to sell it to the buyer type that's going to be ideal for that sort of business, and that is probably going to be the staff.
Is there one simple way to sell to staff, or are there many ways you can sell down to staff?
Look, there's a number of different ways.
Yeah.
Employee share ownership programs, ESOPs, are one way. You can get a private equity-backed management buyout, or you can even get management buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
So private equity-backed management buyout is... a financial investor comes in and invests alongside the staff who aren't expected to put up too much money. Someone else has to provide the money for that.
Right.
A management buy-in is when the management actually has the funds to buy out the owner.
Mm.
And they buy in and maybe they salary sacrifice over time and so on and so forth. Lots of different ways to do it.
We have clients who will do a third option, which might be the first one, but I worded it a different way, which is essentially here are your shares. They're worth $50,000. The dividend out of that will be X. We'll retain the dividend and pay it down interest-free. Yep. That's just...
That's generally how an ESOP works.
Okay.
In very basic terms.
Okay. Keeping an eye on the clock because 17 minutes we're in and I feel like there's still another hour we could go. And the point of this episode, I wanted to get him in and make you guys aware of Andrew because it was an amazing conversation I had with him, and this is probably the tip of the iceberg. You're going to reach out to him and have a chat with him. I still got a couple of questions. So, you know, what would be – we've kind of touched on it and I think it's pretty obvious, but, like, what is the benefit of using you? Like, I think everyone has in the back of their mind, if I sold, of course I'd get a broker. But at what point do we get you involved?
Well, generally, you know, at least 2 years before the event. But right. I have found recently that it's actually really hard to find people who are that proactive.
Right.
So who are actually thinking, you know, I'm 2 years ahead, I'm going to start preparing now. It's very, very small.
Do people think they've nailed it and then they haven't? Is that what it is? Absolutely. It's just ego?
Well, as I said, people love their baby.
Yeah.
You know, it takes someone like me to come and tell them it's ugly. It's better than the buyer telling them it's ugly.
100%. You only got one shot with the buyer.
Absolutely. We only get one shot at selling the business. Mm. But the main reason why you use someone like me is I've been doing this for 20 years. It's a day in, day out. That's a long time. You cannot replicate that in your own experience being an expert in what you do, which is running a recruitment business. So if you're going to go to market, if you're going to prepare a business for sale, you need the expertise of people who've been through that process multiple times so that you get the best outcome. Otherwise, you're flying blind.
And you would start seeing things unraveling or happening that you know where that ends up, and we'd be like, oh, no, that sounds fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I've asked you so many questions. I've got so many more questions. I'm trying to think, what is the best last question? What are some of the key things business owners can do better to prepare themselves for a sale?
Well, I think we go back to what I was saying earlier, know thy buyer. Mm. That is probably number one, the best thing to do. And that's not just a cursory, I'll sell to a deco one day. You know,
yes.
That's their goalposts might change during that time. Mm. You need to be really definite about it and really specific about what the persona of that buyer actually is, not naming names, but just a profile, but understand how they buy, why they buy, where they buy. Have a look at references or previous transactions they've made just to see how they've actually gone about it. But the big thing is understanding why they buy, because the strategic buyer, one who's buying because they're going to get much more value out of the business than someone who's just bolting it on to what they've already got, is going to give you the best outcome in terms of sale price, so that they'll end up paying more. 1 + 1 = 3 for a strategic buyer. If you are running a business at the moment and maybe it's a labour hire business and you've got, you know, 5,000 hours going through the business at the moment and you want to sell to another labour hire company, that's fine, but just temper your expectations in terms of sale price, because all they're going to do is take what you've got, add it to what they've got. But it's nothing new for them, it's just scale.
It's just size.
It's just size. They might get some people, they'll get some casuals, get some revenue, but they're not getting anything new. But if there was, as I said, an offshore buyer that was like, I want to be the best in finance and accounting, when they come searching, you want them to find you.
On that, I know there's another question. Specialist or generalist agencies?
In terms of running a business or selling a business?
In terms of selling, this is the context of this episode, do you prefer to see agencies who are really dominating one area?
Absolutely. Laser focused.
Okay.
You've got to be the best at something. What do you hang your hat on every day when you close your door?
Okay.
Because that's why someone's going to want to buy the business. If they're a generalist, they're in no man's land.
Mm.
You know, there's so many of them out there. But if you are dominating one particular sector, like geotech engineers, well, that's one of them, isn't it?
Is it one of them?
But if you were the absolute number one in geotech engineers, when someone is looking to buy a geotech engineer business, the only one that's going to come up on their radar is yours. Mm. How exciting is that going to be for them and you to know that there's someone who dominates that market?
I like it.
But if you do geotech engineers and a bit of aged care and a bit of IT and a bit of this and a bit of that, it's blancmange. They're just looking at going, that's nothing special there.
Mm.
Doesn't excite me. Might be great for the bottom line. You might be thinking you're making a lot of money all the way through, but no one's going to want to buy it.
Andrew, wealth of knowledge, blowing my mind once again. Thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Guys, that's all we have for you today. If you got anything out of this episode, please like, share, subscribe. Go and join and follow Andrew on LinkedIn. You're on LinkedIn, aren't you?
I am on LinkedIn. Yes.
Always putting up some good.
To find me.
Yep, that's it. Have a chat with him. Reach out to him. DM him. DM me if you want an intro. If you are considering selling or you just want to have a chat, his door is open. He'll have a chat. He'll come have lunch with you and see where that goes. As always, have an amazing day. May all your deals come true.